The message for today is out of the book of Hebrews. If you'd like, go ahead and turn there. Hebrews chapter 10 is where we'll be. If you have one of the pew Bibles, the page number will be 1191. 1191. Hebrews chapter 10, and I'll be reading verses 22 through 25. Hebrews 10, 22 through 25, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. The message is titled, Let Us. There are five of them just in that passage alone. Towards the end of the message, we'll be in Hebrews 12, and we'll pick up two more. Let us draw near to God. I know that in my life, there's been many times where I have run from God. Bad things have happened, sometimes good things have happened, and I've run from God. One way or the other, I thought, I don't need God right now, or God has left me, and I've run far from him. And I think that's perhaps why the author of Hebrews, that was the first let us that he gave to this group of Christians, let us draw near to God. The story I think about for drawing near to God is a story known as the prodigal son. It's a story that Jesus told in the middle of what is known as the lost chapter in Luke. He talks about the lost sheep, the lost coin, and then tells a longer story about the lost son, the prodigal son. This young man came up to his dad, Jesus tells, and asked for his inheritance. Essentially says, Dad, I wish you were dead. Give me my money now. And the father's a kind father, and he gives his son the money. Now, whether the son intended to go far from his father and family, Jesus doesn't explain in the parable, but either way, he did. He eventually finds himself penniless and friendless. Jesus tells that this young man got a job slopping hogs, which especially for a Jew would have been very unclean, let alone slopping hogs is unclean. And he gets so hungry, he decides he's going to eat out of the hog trough. Growing up, we raised hogs. I don't think I even would have ate cheese out of a hog trough. And as everyone knows, I love cheese. It could have even been Gouda or one of my favorite, like Havarti. I don't think I would pick that up out of a hog trough and eat that. But that's what this young man was considering doing. And then Jesus says, when he came to his senses, he thought, I can go back to my father's home. At the very least, I can be his servant, because even one of his servants is treated better than this. So the young man starts back towards his father. And then Jesus transitions to the father's point of view and says, the father, as was his custom, every day this dad had been going out to the road looking to see if his son was coming home. And Jesus says in his story, when he saw the young man a long way off, this proper Jewish father pulled up the robe and ran to meet his son. Didn't accuse him of all the things he's done wrong, just gives him this great big hug and throws a celebration because his son that was lost is now found. Perhaps today you're the prodigal. Maybe you've run far from God, maybe on purpose, maybe accidentally. Turn back, come to your senses, return to God, draw near to him. The second let us is about holding unswervingly. For me, this has always been probably the most difficult. I was blessed to come from a great family. My dad became a Christian in his 20s, and most of my family were all raised in church. And so I knew all of the stories in Old and New Testament. But as everyone knows, at some point, that faith becomes your own. It becomes more than mom or dad's or your Sunday school teacher or whoever your person of influence is. And you come up to a point where you're making decisions. Maybe to run away from faith for a time or permanently. Maybe to draw closer, draw nearer to God. But for me, it really was a struggle, and still is, when bad things happen. I believe that bad things generally happen in three categories. Not a why, but three categories. I think there's self-inflicted, others inflicted, and then chance inflicted. For self-inflicted, it can be sin. Maybe you lie, or you cheat on your spouse, or you steal something. Obviously, bad things will happen, but that's self-inflicted. Sometimes it's not a sin. Maybe you decide, I'm going to quit this job and start another job. Not a sinful decision, but maybe it was a bad one, and your new job is worse. Or perhaps you're in a current job, and you decide to stay in that job. That's not a sin, but maybe that's bad things are happening because of that. But that's still part, I think, in the self-inflicted. You're choosing your job or vehicle or et cetera. Of course, others is a little more obvious. Perhaps you have a lousy neighbor. Maybe you've had bad family. Maybe your family was not as great as mine is of empowering and encouraging me. Perhaps terrible things have happened to you because of others. Could be hurtful words, not just as a child, but as a teen, as an adult. Sometimes people are just awful. And then chance inflicted. For this, I mean more like, I think I've hit three deer. Two of those three hit me on the side door. Perhaps you've been one of those where a deer, you know, headbutted the side of your car for reasons unknown. Or you've hit a deer. Or a tree limb has fallen on a shed. Or bad things happen. And those to me are chance things that happen. The important part is, regardless of those reasons, I guess we're never promised a life of ease. I don't understand why some of the bad things happen. I don't know. I think for sometimes there is no real reason. Sometimes we can point to a specific cause. Sometimes bad things happen. Our world is broken. And of course, we need God to help us. I know that sometimes it's no comfort to hear that bad things happen and they will probably continue to happen. But that is the truth. That's what the Bible talks about. In this same chapter where we're at, the author in verse 35, 36, and 39 mentions this. The author writes, "Do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised." And then verse 39, "We are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved." Again, a story of Jesus comes to my mind about this passage. The longest recorded sermon we have of Jesus is known as the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5 through 7. That sermon starts with the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the righteous. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. And then the last one, he said, blessed are those who are persecuted. In Matthew 5, 6, and 7, Jesus kind of meandered all over, preaching this wonderful sermon from a hillside as thousands gathered. He closed with a simple story about the builders. Probably you're familiar with this story, but he says that there are two builders. One builds his house or his life on the sand, on the shifting sand, and the other builds his house, his life, on the solid rock. Then Jesus says that storms come to both. And in the original language, in the Greek language, this is not just a passing thunderstorm. This is a beating against it sort of a storm, just a pounding floods thunderstorm. The house that's on the sand falls flat. The house that's on the rock is able to stand. Both endure a terrific storm. I can look back in my life and I can think of times where bad things have happened, terrific storms. Sometimes I've clung desperately as it feels like my house, my life is just being shattered. For some of those things, I can look back and I can understand, oh, that's why that happened. But there are still moments in my life, still periods in my life where I still don't understand. Yet during that time, I was able to hold on to the rock. Some people, some of my friends think that that sounds crazy. Why would you keep holding the rock if bad things happen? But it has been what has stabilized my relationship with my wife, with my family, work relations, other things that have happened. God has always been that rock for me that I can cling to. Perhaps today you need to cling to that solid rock. Maybe bad things are happening to you even right now. Cling to that rock. Perhaps you're on the other side. Maybe your life is on the rock, but it's nice and sunny. The weather is great. Well, you might have a house full of life preservers. God might be asking you to go help someone who might be drowning in their life issues. Don't stand idly by. Help others. And that's the third let us. Let us help one another toward love and good deeds. Another time, Jesus was talking to a large group of people. And the teachers of the law, lawyers, they were called out of the Old Testament law, not lawyers like we have today. They came to Jesus. And this one lawyer wanted to kind of trick Jesus with a question. The question was, what is the greatest commandment? And they were hoping Jesus might pick something that wasn't so great or they could argue with him. And Jesus quotes out of Deuteronomy. He quotes what is known in Jewish customs as the royal law. We know it is the greatest commandment. You shall love the Lord your God with all your soul, heart, mind, and strength. That is the greatest commandment. Jesus said all the laws and all the prophets hang on this one. This is what they are built on. Love the Lord your God with all your soul, heart, mind, and strength. But Jesus continued and he gave him a bonus greatest commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, the lawyer, this teacher of the law, didn't kind of want to let that lie, so he asked Jesus another question. Well, who is my neighbor? Instead of answering directly, Jesus tells a story. He says, a certain man went from Jerusalem down to Jericho and fell among thieves. He was waylaid by robbers, and he was beaten and left half dead. So there's this guy wounded alongside the road, and Jesus says, then a priest came by. The priest is someone like myself, they've been ordained. They weren't born to the church, but somewhere along their path of life, they became ordained. So a priest comes by. Now in those days, just like today, there were some lousy priests, pastors, and there were some great ones. When Jesus told this story, the crowd that listened, some might have seen what was coming. Others might have thought, oh good, someone is here to help and the neighbor will be the priest and we need to help people. But Jesus says, no, the priest goes by on the other side. And then a Levite comes. A Levite in Jewish faith is someone who is literally born to the church. It would be a male, but it would be their father was a priest. That father was a priest. Levite comes from the tribe of Levi. There was originally a Levi who was one of the 12 sons of Jacob, and that is where the first synagogue, all of them came from the house of Levi. So if you were a Levite, you could trace your ancestors directly to Levi. You were born to the church. Certainly, this person would help. But of course, if you know the story, this Levite passes by on the other side. And then Jesus, I kind of pictured the crowd really listening. All right, if a priest won't do it and a Levite, maybe it'll be that running father that Jesus has told us about. But instead, Jesus says a Samaritan passes by. If you don't know, the Samaritans are neighbors to Israel's north. They're now known what's known as Syria. Syria and Israel have never gotten along. The city of Damascus, of Nineveh, and some of these others were Syrian cities. They were Samaritan people that lived there. To put it mildly, they did not get along. The Samaritan immediately gets down off of his donkey, dresses this man's bloody wounds, puts the man on the donkey, takes him to a nearby inn, pays for everything that needs to get done, plus leaves more money, and says, if anything more is needed, I'll be back and I'll even do that. And of course, Jesus asked the lawyer who in this story is the neighbor, and the lawyer is left with nothing to say other than the Samaritan. And that's our point for today. This Samaritan in this let us encourage, he didn't have to think twice. His way of life was to love the Lord your God with all your soul, heart, mind, and strength. With everything he had, he loved God. He saw someone that needed help, so he helped. I think often in Christian circles, we want to come up with excuses. I know myself, of why we don't help. We might say, well, they're just looking for a handout, or they got themselves into this mess, or the Samaritan didn't say, hey, you dummy, why didn't you have, you know, an entourage come down? Everyone knows this way is dangerous. You should. No, he gets down and he helps. We are asked to be God's hands and feet here on earth, to be his workers. We are the ones that are asked to help. So do not pass anyone by. Offer help. Do what you can and then more. The fourth encouragement, the fourth let us, is let us keep meeting together. I've been in and out of church most of my life. There have been times where I just didn't want to go for the very common reason of the church is full of hypocrites. That's pretty much the common reason why people don't go to church. Now when I invite friends to church and they say, well, the church is full of hypocrites, I usually say, yeah, so we could always use another one. And I invite them in too. Because as it turns out, the church is full of people. None of them are perfect. Not a single one. I know some of you are super people, but none of us are perfect. There are going to be times where we are going to be hypocrites. There will be times where we will talk about speaking encouraging to one another, and then we let our boss have it, or our friend, or our child, or our spouse. Those are bad moments. Those are called sin. And we ask God to forgive us, and he forgives us. And I think that we need to keep meeting together. It's interesting that this ancient church, that was one of the encouragements. I mean, our ancient ancestors, first century, many of these had met the disciples firsthand. And the author of Hebrews has to encourage them, hey, keep going to church. I know sometimes it's a little icky, but keep going to church. And there's a variety of reasons why we need to do that. But don't give up meeting together. You can get great encouragement. When the church works how it's supposed to, it is a place of power. It is a place of healing. It is a place of encouragement, a place of help. I think this is a good church. I think that happens here. I also know there's other good churches. Be sure that you are in one. Keep meeting together. The fifth one, let us encourage one another. This is the last one in this passage. We'll have a few more. Let us encourage one another. I think this is the one that kind of nails all of them together. Again, if people are finding church to be super encouraging, they'll keep coming back. If they find Christians that are encouraging and helping one another, they'll keep coming to church. They'll want to hear more about the Bible, more about our faith. Ephesians 4:29 says, don't let anything unwholesome or unsavory come out of your mouth, but only that which is good for the lifting up and building of others, so that whoever is listening might benefit. That's Ephesians 4:29. Often, we don't have that. As the great theologian Thumper said, if you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. A rabbit figured it out. I would think as humans, we can figure that out. Let your words be encouraging. Let your actions be encouraging. And just a quick note, I think also, sometimes I think there's a misconception about the Holy Spirit. I share this often with people. The Holy Spirit, part of what he does is convicts. But that's not all. If all the Holy Spirit did was convict, he'd be like the other Disney character, Jiminy Cricket, just kind of do this, do this. When Jesus said that he was going to send the Holy Spirit, seven times he called him the consoler or counselor or comforter. The Holy Spirit does not beat us up for the mistakes that we have made. The Holy Spirit may point out, Joe, you've done this wrong. And then I ask God's forgiveness earnestly. God forgives me. The Holy Spirit does not keep bringing that up. He does not say, you're not good enough. Here you go again. You're only going to fail. You're ugly. You don't matter. That is only the voice of the devil. That is never the voice of the Holy Spirit. God's voice is always encouraging us to come to him, to respond to him. That's all I'll say on that. But the Holy Spirit should be there to encourage you, and you should be utilizing the gifts the Holy Spirit has empowered you to help other people. With all of that being said, I want to also read a passage out of 2 Corinthians. We have this great ability to be voices of encouragement, people of action. And yet, and this is one of my favorite Bible passages out of 2 Corinthians 4, yet we are fragile people. Again, this is not a surprise to God. He created us. In the book of 2 Corinthians, which is towards the end of Paul's ministry, he has been shipwrecked several times. He has been beaten and flogged. Fellow believers, similar things have happened to them. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, I'll read verses 6 and 7, and then 16 through 18. Paul wrote, for God said, let light shine out of darkness. He made his light shine in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. We sometimes have great darkness. God fills us with his Son, with his Spirit, so that we can be light and so we can give others light in a very dark world. Paul continued, we have this treasure, so this treasure of God, the treasure of Holy Spirit, in jars of clay, fragile flower pots. That is what we are, and yet we can be filled, as Paul says, with all surpassing power that is from God and not from us. And then verses 16 through 18, therefore we do not lose heart. Outwardly we might be wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes, not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Perhaps today you need to be encouraged. Perhaps you can encourage others. Either way, we need to be sure that we are fixing our eyes, that our focus is not on earthly things. Of course, we need to be paying attention to what's going on and bills and etc. But why are we doing that? Why do we work? Why do we play? What is our focus? Is our focus fixed on Christ? The author of Hebrews had a similar thing to say in Hebrews chapter 12. He talks about a cloud of witnesses, a cloud of support that are testifying of God's love and grace. I'm going to read verses 1 and 2 of Hebrews chapter 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, here's the next, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Next, let us run with perseverance the race that is marked out for us. And then let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. You might need to throw off some entangling sin. It might be bogging you down. Throw that sin off. Ask God to forgive you. Perhaps the worries and strife of this life are bogging you down. They are entangling you. Don't let that happen. Throw those things off. Fix your eyes on Jesus. We must run with perseverance or patience the race that is marked out for us. And of course, this run is our life. It's not a literal run. Our life, in a way, is marked out for us. From that, is how I take it, is I cannot live one of your lives. I can live my life. Certainly my life impacts others. My wife, our four kids, family, this church, my friends. But I still can only run my life. I make the choices for what I will do next, how I will respond to something. We are running our own race. We all have great freedom how to run it. We can run it with great patience, with great endurance, and great kindness. Others sometimes are impatient, are unkind, and they choose to run their life by lashing out at others. That's not how we should be running our race. When I was getting ready for the message, I like sports quite a bit. I do like the Olympics. I'm not a huge Olympic fan, but I think there are moments in the Olympics that are special, that in a way transcend. Of course, we most recently had the Summer Olympics just this past summer. But the one I thought of was in 1992, the Barcelona Games. And, of course, lots of track and field and events. As you know, I love history. And for me, the 92 Olympics were historical for a variety of reasons. First, not a real, important reason, but for the first time, the NBA players, the pro basketball players, were allowed in the Olympics. So it was called the Dream Team. So Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, the best players were in the Olympics. So that was kind of a big deal. But more importantly, South Africa had its first team since 1960. Apartheid had ruled that country of not just racial segregation, but imprisonment and terrible things. Nelson Mandela had been released. They were starting to have free elections. He would go on later to be elected as the president. South Africa had been banned from the Olympics since 1960, and they were having their first team. Since 1964, Germany had always sent a West team and an East team. And I'm old enough to remember the Soviet bloc and as Mr. Gorbachev tear down this wall. I remember watching that and seeing as the Soviet Union crumbled, as East and West Germany came together and they sent for the first time since 64 a unified team. Some of the Soviet bloc countries like Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania were sending their first teams since 1930s, 1936, 1932. Other teams were sending their first ever Olympic team because of Soviet bloc. And I remember all of this and watching as the Parade of Nations with the flags came in, and not just me, but in my community, knowing people from other countries that were weeping as they saw their ancestors' country was now able to send. They'd come out of this oppression of the Soviet bloc and were sending athletes to the Olympics. And of course, the United States had a great field of athletes. I won't lie, I had a crush on Jennifer Capriati. She was 16, and she won gold for tennis. I was 14, so, you know, I thought, well, maybe, you know, she'll come to Lena. She didn't, so, you know. But she won gold, and there was lots of other athletes. Gail Devers was doing hurdles. I remember watching her trip on the last one, but was still such a great athlete. She got up and ran and won, still won. She didn't give up. I remember watching Carl Lewis. It was like on some show, but he jumped the length of a school bus. I was incredible. I remember watching this at 14 years old and very impressed. He was doing long jump. He won. Shannon Miller, I think was her name, doing gymnastics, won pretty much everything. Jackie Joyner-Kersee on the women track and field, pretty much every event she either medaled in or won. And I remember watching all this, but I also remember watching a British runner. I had not heard of him until that Olympics. His name is Derek Redmond. In a minute, I'm going to show you a video from a run that he did. But Derek Redmond was, at that time, as I learned, again, no internet or Facebook or those things. So when you watched the Olympics, you didn't know what happened yet, unless you were like East Coast and had an early paper, I suppose. Derek Redmond, in a way, was the Usain Bolt of his time. For some of you younger people, you know Usain Bolt. He's pretty much the fastest person on the planet. Usually with Usain Bolt, it's not will he win, but by how much will he win. Even now as an old guy in his 30s, he still was dominating the Olympics. Derek Redmond was very similar. He won most of the races he was in, not all of them, but most of the time it was, would he break the record, which was his record. He was extremely fast. And so as he was running in the Olympics, it came time to run the semifinal heats. So again, in the Olympics at those times, they would show the semifinal runs right up to the gold medal. There was no delay or waiting. And I put together, if I can wake the computer up, I put together a video of that run, of Derek Redmond getting ready to run in this heat in the Olympics. And he is in lane number 5, and I believe his number is 749. So as you watch it, be looking for lane number 5,